Welcome to Watching Westworld, the officially unofficial podcast for Westworld on HBO. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we are doing our season seven, or sorry.
Whoa!
I've got too many documents open. Season one wrap up for Westworld. You didn't know it was going
Nolan,
seven seasons.
Nolan and Joy had two more seasons. I didn't see that coming. It's actually the year 2027.
Yeah. I'm an AI.
Westworld has become, yes, superfluous because there is actual AI roaming the world.
Yeah, we're doing our season one wrap up, so we're gonna kind of talk about what we our thoughts on the season. Maybe do a little guessing game about where this is going next. I don't know how much reading you did with articles and interviews and whatnot with Joy and Nolan, but I read my fair share. It looks like they have some fairly firm ideas for season two.
Okay.
Already.
Well,
not for the overarching thing, but just sort of where. Where we're going to pick up.
Let's talk about that, because I've got a lot, you know, obviously I got a lot of feedback, but if you've got some things you want to talk about season two, let's headline that.
Okay. So apparently in an interview that Nolan did, he was talking about a little about season two and how it's going to start off, and he said we're going to go kind of explain a little bit more about the guest experience, and I don't know if they plan on season two being, you know, how season one was kind of a look at the host experience
right.
in the park. Now we might go and look at the guest experience is what I'm
Do you
I'm
think that'll be as an extreme as like The Wire, where it's like, you know, season two you came back and it's like it's all the dock workers. Wow.
Right.
Okay. I guess this is what they're gonna do.
Maybe. He does say that's gonna happen before the mayhem starts. So there will be some mayhem. We will get to see the aftermath of Ford's plan here.
That would be interesting.
I just don't know when.
Because I think a lot of people ask in feedback, like, what are general thoughts for, like, the next play? Like, you know, are the robots doomed or what? I think what's going to happen is that the robots are going to essentially take over Westworld. Bernard's going to be the new leader. The board is going to be completely replaced with bots. And they're going to run Westworld as normal and try to start funneling robots to the outside, I'm guessing. So I think it would be kind of effective in season two to just show it from the human's perspective. So we'll see some things that are kind of off kilter and weird.
Right.
And we'll know what's going on, but the guests will be kind of oblivious to it, to the growing danger. And then, you know, when the quote unquote mayhem starts, or I wonder if it'll be interesting to see them actually roll the clock back to where, while all this shit was going on with Dolores and Maeve, and we kind of concentrated like some of these jackasses that we just saw in the periphery, you know, doing random stuff, if we'll, like, have a few episodes where we see them, you know, essentially it goes back, like, 2 weeks to show, from the guest perspective, what Westworld was like as it was descending into this chaos.
Right. Yeah, we could definitely do that. I think...
But the robots have to stay undercover, or they'll be wiped out, is my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this last episode. There's nothing they can do to compete with the weapons that humanity already has
right.
at its disposal.
They might be smarter and stronger, but we have fucking tanks and shit. So.
Yeah, and thousands of years of history on them. Like,
right.
we have the head start, so good luck beating us. But yeah, what they probably need to do is the slow creep toward taking over the world.
Yeah.
So I don't know how that's going to come about, and we talked about how tricky of a line it is to walk with replacing humans with hosts in the real world, where they have to interact with other human beings and they need to have the memories and mannerisms of these people. It would be a very tough thing.
And you could maybe shortcut that a little bit in the beginning, like I mentioned, like if all the board members just came home and just decided they were going to either commit suicide, like a couple of them commit suicide, a couple of them get estranged from their family suddenly.
How do you decide which ones you program to commit suicide?
Narratives.
There it is.
Yeah,
you're just like, well, this guy.
Bernard sits down and decides, this guy's
got. He had a particular tick that
yeah.
I just can't get it. I can't duplicate it.
This guy looks
it,
like
so
he's going to have a heroin overdose. This guy looks like he's. this woman looks like she's just going to check out on her family. I don't know, but I feel like that's a way they could go. But. And then, so there's a lot of dramatic possibilities as well as having, like, these robots getting into the world and, like, oh, who's a robot and who's a human.
Any investigative reporter worth his salt would figure that out.
You think so?
Like,
but
there's
such
a big
ridiculous
event
notion.
Where all of these people go to Westworld, they all return, and all of them either kill themselves or divorce their families. Like, there would be a paper trail here that something weird is happening.
Yeah.
And you'd have to go investigate.
So that's another thing. It's like, we don't know how the outside works. Like, you know, what's the economy look like? What is the, you know, what's job situation? What's the foreign, you know, policy situation with the United States, assuming that Westworld is a U.S. company, if the United States is still around? But like I said, there's a lot of interesting dramatic possibilities with the paranoia of, like, who's a robot, who's a human. But also there's a lot of tropey shit, too. Like,
oh, sure.
You know, if anyone can be a human or a, you know, host, and that kind of quickly can make can fatigue an audience. So
yeah.
I have faith that these people have thought all that stuff through and they can tell some satisfied narratives around there. But I guess those are the areas of concern.
I suppose the other way that we could get sort of the experience of the guest, like he's talking about, is if we went to another park. Maybe we don't know if there are more than these. I speculate that there's only one because Ford has supreme control over the information, and I don't know that would be the case if there were more than one park.
Yeah, my read on this, we have some feedback on this, but we can just serve up some dry pie, which is a Game of Thrones term for emails that we get that I wrote down to talk about, but we ended up organically talking about.
Yeah,
it's hard to explain. If you've seen Game of Thrones, you haven't. But yeah, my take on Samurai World or Shogun World, if you prefer, is that is like something they're beta testing.
I think I agree. Yeah,
because I don't think Robert Ford would let. I mean, it's canon that he hasn't let this technology escape the confines of this park. Now, maybe there is a section of Westworld carved out that's the Shogun World, but I don't know. I think this is one of the things that he saw coming down the pike, and he saw the writing on the wall and why he stepped up his plans for the robots to become conscious, because he saw that he was being ousted and squeezed out, and they were having these new narratives and new stories that he had no connection to.
Right.
I don't have any evidence, but that's just my gut feeling.
Yeah, yeah, that feels right to me. And we do know that HBO has since registered ExploreSamuraiWorld.com and ExploreShogunWorld.com.
Is it Discover or Explore or both?
I think it's Explore. Okay. I'm not sure if they got both, but for sure they got Explore.
Okay.
On both of those. So I don't know if this is them covering their bases and just trying to snatch up domains before anyone else does, or if this is like planning for the future seasons. Right.
That's another way they could have a pure guest experience by taking us to Samurai World, where none of this has happened yet, but then maybe seeing it spread.
Yeah.
Or they could cut their time back and forth between the two. I don't know how interesting that is, but
I don't know either.
It's something they have at their fingertips now.
Is there anything interesting to be had in the idea that the robots... So the hosts are clearly on the rampage. There are two outcomes here. Either the humans find out about it or they don't, and the park gets continues to operate or gets shut down, right?
Yeah.
If the park gets shut down, is there any interesting story there? Like what to do
the with diaspora the... of are any host able to get out before it's shut down, or any of them able to escape into the wild, and then what do they do? Because can they procreate?
I assume I don't know if any of them have the knowledge necessary
to stick their penises and vaginas and
can they procreate
of course you could, since they're making these, they're 3D printing these things, they could literally just omit the ovaries or the testes like there's a lot of things they could do just to make them infertile,
but we know life finds a way
the Teddy's gonna fuck a frog and it's going to get the DNA mixed up, and then he's going to turn into a woman and have sex with a frog version of himself, and there you go. But no, I mean, I guess maybe that's can they procreate either traditionally or like nuts and a bolts kind of way? Because that's the biggest challenge, is to remain hidden and also to grow and evolve and expand as a species. They'd have to be able to reproduce. So I think that's would be a super interesting plot line.
Yeah, I mean, the other way they can
reproduce is... It's
weird.
It's kind of like, I know you were big into, what was that, Falling Skies? But, you know, it's like there's always been these stories of, like, humans being the resistance against this large alien threat. Like, humans would kind of be that threat, and the robots would be the rebel in society trying to find human sympathizers and evade detection by the powers of be. Like, I mean, that could go pretty tropey pretty quick, too. But
it could, yeah.
I could be down for a few seasons of that.
Yeah, I'm interested. I'm really curious where they go with this after the rebellion in the park.
Yeah.
That's about all I want to speculate on season two.
There was another interview I read where Jonathan Nolan said that someone asked him, is Anthony Hopkins dead? And he said, this version of Dr. Ford is done.
So how many years are they going to bring him back?
I don't. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't. To me, I fully expect some form of Dr. Ford to make a return.
So you think it's greater than zero? Like, the number of years, seasons they're going to bring Ford back for?
I mean, I mean by that is to the extent that Bernard is Arnold, uh-huh. Like, there might be a robot that that doesn't look anything like Anthony Hopkins, or maybe it does. Oh. They've got this ability to make a CGI Anthony Hopkins. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's technology that's existing right now where you can take a few hours of a person's dialogue and make them say whatever they want and their inflection and all that stuff. That's that
right.
Adobe Photoshop for voice kind of program. So yeah. They could do that. And also, it would be interesting. To the extent that Bernard was this simulation of Arnold, and that Ford taught him to do that, mm-hmm. Like, what would it be like if you built a version of you and then taught that version to be you? It mm-hmm. wouldn't be the same as you, but it'd be as close as you could get, right?
Sure.
Like, this is how you act, and this is how you think, and this is like, and you spent like 15 years crafting that kind of experience.
Yeah.
It'd be a way to keep the character of Dr. Ford alive without keeping Anthony Hopkins alive. And also the fact that, like, it's not exactly Dr. Ford, so they could play with his character in interesting ways, too.
Sure. Okay.
But the fact that he's saying this version, I'm like, okay, well, Jesus, that means...
Well, I mean...
He's keeping the door open, if nothing else.
Certainly, certainly. And maybe he's even just speaking of flashbacks. That's a possibility. I mean... This version, are they going to CG him to show him as young again? That's sure. A different version, I guess, of Ford.
Right.
I don't know. There are a lot of ways to interpret that, certainly. But it sounds like in some capacity we're going to see Ford in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's, you know, this early, I would be disappointed if they would absolutely say yes or no on anything.
Right.
Because they've got at least a year and a half before this thing's going to see the light of day.
Yep.
So I would be disappointed if they were making a bunch of categorical statements about, oh, you can expect this and you can't expect this and blah, blah, blah. So,
right.
Shall we get the feedback?
No, I have a lot of other things I want to talk about.
Okay, sorry.
I'm going to stomp all over these emails.
Stomp them to pieces.
Just clog through them. I want to talk a little bit about consciousness and AI.
Okay.
Because obviously that's one of the central questions of this show. What do you think the show had to say about AI and consciousness? Because in my opinion, it sort of had an inevitability to it mm-hmm. in this season.
Yep.
And I'm wondering if that was what they were trying to say with AI and consciousness, that even though we may try to limit it and even though we may try to control it, it's just not possible. That any sufficiently complex human-like AI is going to develop consciousness at some point.
It's certainly a risk.
Yeah.
Like, you can't, like, you, what'd you say when we were about an hour ago before we were doing some pre-show talking, and said...
I was wondering if you could devise an artificial intelligence that wouldn't gain consciousness.
Like, that's one of
that
its...
That you could guarantee wouldn't.
So that's one of its, like, you know, your design goals, for example. Design goal is to have artificial intelligence does not attain any kind of human-like consciousness.
And I don't mean like a car assembly robot.
Right.
What I'm talking about is human-level AI. Something that could be on par with humans for intelligence.
Okay, it could be different, but its capabilities as far as, you know, complex thoughts and, you know, initiative and all that would be roughly on par with ours. And I said... That seems like something that's in the realm of gambling because, you know, life biologically did not intend to create consciousness, but yet here we are. So mm-hmm. also it's we're at this weird point in our technological and medical development where I think where we're at our fingertips is the ability to create that AI that you speak of, but we don't understand our own brain processes enough to be absolutely categorical about, oh, we got to look at this pattern and this and that. And, you know, it's not like you can just throw some kind of a stop point that says, you know, if consciousness detected, then, you know, throw an error on the stack.
It's a Boolean. Consciousness 1 or 0.
Yeah. So, like, I don't know what. Since we don't know why we're conscious and what parts make us conscious and how that emerged, it would be very hard to say as a design goal to not do that thing.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like how are you going to guarantee that? So, and that's why a lot of really smart people are excited / terrified of the prospect of AI, because it is in a lot of cases toddlers playing in a nitroglycerin factory.
Sure.
So, yeah. I mean, yes, they could do great things. Great things. They could build the Hoover Dam, and they could blast tops off of mountains, and they could explore through space, but they can also just blow themselves up. So, yeah. So what does the show say definitive? I don't think that's the thing. Is I don't know. The show had a lot of opinions about artificial intelligence and consciousness.
Right.
The one that was last articulated that maybe seems to hold the most weight was what Ford said, which is suffering or consciousness requires suffering.
Sure.
But that was... number one, I think that in the seasons ahead, we're going to understand that he was right about a lot of things, but he's also wrong about a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And I think that some of his concepts of consciousness are going to be proven to be wrong. So, like, I don't – just because he is a smart guy and he's it's the last thing we heard, I don't think that's the final word on it.
I agree.
But as far as it being inevitable and, like, it's an evolutionary process is beyond our control, I guess I'm kind of sympathetic to that view.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose I'm looking for season one to kind of establish a voice for the show as far as consciousness and AI, and then play with the ideas that brings up, as opposed to this being some ongoing 5-season discussion about, you know, the nature of consciousness.
Right.
Like, I guess I'm looking for a little bit more of like a Black Mirror type of thing in the later seasons here.
Yeah, so one of the first emails I had is this Ken T from Boston, where he talks about a great deal about consciousness, which we might not be ready to talk about now, but he's of the opinion that in season one, or in season two, they're going to shift away from discussion of consciousness, and it's going to move towards what is free will.
Okay.
Because I think that's actually why we're still kind of – I mean, it'd be an interesting thing for the show to do, why we're still wrestling with the concept of consciousness. They throw another philosophical bomb and, like, what is the nature of free will? Because that's something you can debate quite a bit nowadays as well. And that's – I think they're playing with that idea with, you know, him saying that Arnold forced you to do this and I'm letting you do your own free choice. But if our choices are just – the product of the information we have at our fingertips, and he gave her false information, which I think he did. You know, he led her to believe that he was evil as a representative of mankind. Then she made the decision to murder someone that was essentially innocent, and she probably wouldn't have done that if she'd known. So did she have free will when someone, you know?
Right, and we talked about this last episode, and I don't agree with that necessarily. But, yeah, I mean, I think it would be an interesting thing for the show to discuss.
Uh-huh.
And certainly kind of a natural progression from consciousness, right? Because they're in a lot of ways intertwined with each other.
And eventually the show will have to come up with a thesis on consciousness, or else, I mean, you can't be like, you know, I don't know what consciousness is, you know, 5 seasons in with robots that are clearly conscious.
Right. Like, it does seem like the show... was giving a pretty definitive answer on that, right? The choice, the ability to make your own choices.
Yeah.
That is the nature of consciousness, I guess, according to the show.
Okay.
I mean, that's what it all culminated in. So unless they kind of open another door next season and say, well, we said this one thing about a particular aspect of consciousness, and now we're going to delve further into it.
Right.
Then...
Well, because also they could go the other way and, you know, instead of granting the robots consciousness, you know, cast doubt on how conscious human beings are. Mm-hmm. They could do some philosophical mind fucks where that, because, you know, I reject all that stuff as just essentially, you know, philosophical daydreaming. But, like, you know, you could probably make an argument for how conscious is the average person. Like, you come up with arbitrary rules of what consciousness means and then go grab average Joe or Jane off the street and ask, are they conscious? You know, they're stuck. I mean, we've talked about this as well. So there's also room for them to kind of go and run the ball backwards a bit and attack, like, you know, what does it mean to be conscious and what does it mean to be present and alive and in control of your destiny from that direction, too.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, like, I like all that stuff.
Yeah, me too. One other thing I noticed, I think at this moment when we leave season one, I think Lee is actually the safest human in the park.
Because he's in cold storage.
Right. He's hidden deep underground. There are no hosts around.
Yeah.
They're all out just rampaging through the board.
Right.
I feel like Lee might be safe for next season. And I really hope he is because, man, he's a fun character.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. Why would they need to keep Lee around?
I don't know. They wouldn't.
If they want, but if it's like if one of the things I'm speculating, which is the robots need to stay deep undercover, do you let robots write the plots or do you keep it status quo? Like, you know, the robots, are they going to have this, kind of pragmatic look on their own species and nature? Like, okay, exists a subset of these robots who are consciousness, are conscious, and there's a much greater Venn diagram circling around the robots that can attain consciousness and haven't yet. Or maybe they'll think that everyone can attain consciousness. What is the morality of allowing these robots to be raped, pillaged, and plundered with these, you know, human-centric storylines if they believe that? And will there be different factions where some are like, look, we're conscious, this other fucker isn't.
Yeah.
Like, Teddy ain't ready yet, so sorry, but Teddy's got to keep doing what he's doing.
Yeah.
If some of them are more pragmatic, maybe it's easier to have a human, to essentially have a human enslaved to do your writing for you than to come up for the stories yourself.
Right.
Also,
And it would fit in nicely with Ford's idea that, you know, robot consciousness is no different than human consciousness, and, you know, he hopes that the robots will be better. He's going to give them a chance to be better than humans, but they don't necessarily have to be.
Plus,
they probably won't be.
These robots are programmed with a very limited understanding of what your average person would experience back in the Old West.
Right.
So to have them come and make narratives for, you know, people in the modern day that would appeal to them, maybe they just aren't capable of it. So they keep Lee around and force him to write stories.
That would be great. An enslaved Lee is,
I know, that's what I'm saying.
A perfect character for me.
It kind of feels right.
It does.
So, like, he thinks that Teresa was a tyrant or what, like, wait until he's got robotic overlords that he has to satisfy.
Right.
Maeve is sitting,
that could be amazing.
Tapping over his shoulder with a scalpel or whatever.
Yep. All right. I think I'm good. I had some theorizing I wanted to do on Stubbs, but I think that'll be done in the emails.
Okay. Before we get to feedback, just wanted to make sure everyone knew about our club at club.baldmove.com or support.baldmove.com. Great ways to support us as independent podcasters and get some stuff out in return. For example, get ad-free feeds. We're going to be doing an exclusive spoiler review of the new Star Wars Rogue One this Thursday night. Some stuff you can get as a club. Also, we got the Bald Move Badass Christmas raging. We did the first week Rocky IV live watches and podcasts. Then we did Die Hard. This week is all about Jingle All the Way, the Arnold Schwarzenegger classic. Next week is a mystery movie, and there's a ton of other bonus content coming out all that week for club members. So if you like our coverage of Westworld and want to see it continue, and also recognize that we're not going anywhere, we're going to be doing coming up in the late winter, there's going to be Better Call Saul coming back, Walking Dead again. In the spring is The Leftovers, and then we get into Game of Thrones season. Like, we just never stop all year round here at Bald Move. But if you want to get all the features and have all the bonus content, check out our club at club.baldmove.com. Thanks. I want to apologize going forward because I'm going to have to do a lot of reading, and I've just become aware of it becoming stuffed up, so I apologize.
Oh, boy.
If I sound weird. Christy from Boston, I already kind of teased this email, but this is really interesting. Want to open up with this. Want to chime in regarding the pain and suffering requirement as a catalyst towards consciousness. In your last episode, you brought up this thesis, the key, which Ford recognized that Arnold discovered. Jim said the idea was dark, but I wanted to offer a slightly different reading of it. The basic motif here is in Genesis 1. There are examples in other traditions, but this is one that's probably the most ubiquitous in the West.
Are we going for the without evil, there can be no good?
Well, we shall see.
Okay.
The garden, the birth of man, the fall. The garden, and Dolores refers to the world as a garden in her beachfront death scene, is eternal. It exists beyond time, beyond life and death. We think of eternity as a really long time, but in fact, it is no time at all. Time has no bearing on eternity. It's upon eating the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, the pairs of opposites, that man is expelled from this garden, and we enter to the realm of time and duality. Good and evil, life and death, pain and bliss. One reading of this story is to say that Eve did a bad thing and ate an apple, and shame on Eve and that good-for-nothing snake for ruining everything. But there's another reading which says that the fall is necessary to a catalyst to life in the entire history of humanity, or that to be born means that you are to die, that pain and suffering are integral aspects of the life cycle of time and inseparable from joy. Okay. It's our inability to see beyond the perceived duality of these things which keeps us outside the garden. To Dolores, the garden is a prison. To live beyond time and beyond consequences is to live without license and autonomy. To free herself to pave the way for something yet to come, she must become the destroyer, death incarnate, as Wyatt. In becoming death, she is enabling consciousness. She's setting the wheel of time into motion, choosing to become this, to accept the very nature of life in all its horror and splendor. Simultaneously, she's killing her god. She's lifting the curtain to reveal the wizard. In the scene where she finally achieves consciousness and hears her own voice, there is an incredibly moving overdub where Arnold asks her if she knows whose voice she has been hearing. Partway through, this voice merges with Ford's and then with her own. The camera pans out, revealing Dolores looking at herself. Mm-hmm. You may, in fact, look at Arnold and Ford as dual aspects of this one creator of Westworld. Dolores then kills them both, and in killing your god or your idea of god, you free yourself. My sense is that Westworld is less a morality play and more of an attempt to articulate the very nature of life or consciousness, whatever you choose to call it. Given the keys to their own kingdom, will all the hosts suddenly become saints or care bearers? I don't think so. It will fall on Bern Arnold and the other awakened hosts to be the conscious of this new era, and they will have some hard choices to make. I do think that if season one is asking what is consciousness, season two is likely to ask what is free will. Mm-hmm. So when you said, how can you have good without evil, I sense some skepticism in your voice. So I'd like to explore that. Do you think it's true that in absence of evil that you cannot appreciate good, or in absence of pain you cannot enjoy pleasure?
Yeah, I largely agree with
that. I thought you were going to shit on that, and I'm like, huh.
No, I was just like, oh, I've heard this before.
Okay.
but I do like how she put it there. I think it's very eloquently written and described.
So. Because I do think, I don't know that suffering is necessary for consciousness, but certainly choices and experiencing the consequence of those choices is necessary, right? Because imagine, like, if I'm put in a situation where every choice I make leads to something pleasant and good happening to me. Mm-hmm. Is that, that's not real. How would I, if I never got any adversity, how would I think of things like abstract thoughts like, man, life is really shitting on me now, or life is not fair, and meditate, if everything in life is going good for you and you never experience any adversity, would you ever think the question about the nature of your life? And would you have like long monologues with yourself? And
I mean, I guess it depends on what you define as good. Certainly there'd be a spectrum of good, right?
Yeah.
Things can be good and also better than another also good option. So,
but wouldn't it be fun? I mean, but in that universe where you had good, better, best outcomes,
uh-huh.
I think that the
good would be bad, right?
Good would become evil, yeah.
Right. Sure, I get that. And that's ultimately the goal, I think, of society, is to raise everyone's bad to the point where it's good. And so that good becomes the new bad and best becomes what better used to be.
Yeah.
Or no, best becomes something we didn't even know existed.
Right.
A pleasure that's so amazing that it bests what was previously best.
Sure, sure.
And I'm intentionally using confusing language here.
Yeah.
But no, I actually think, that decision as a sort of dawning of consciousness makes a lot of sense. Because in Genesis, God creates Adam and Eve, and what choice do they have until the devil presents them with it? And that choice is the one that Eve takes and eats of the apple, and Adam does.
What would human?
And at that point, they exhibit free will, and at that point, they become conscious, right? And she's also saying, like, you know, she's also alluding to time and the idea that if you live eternally, that time has no meaning,
right?
Which, sure, I agree with that too. I guess I haven't thought about it enough to kind of articulate my thoughts on time and consciousness being entangled or not.
Well, it's funny because you can kind of meditate on it from a robot's perspective here, because we are humans and we're perceiving the existence of time, and yet Dolores's time resets on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. So she's got like a pocket of eternity from her perspective inside our... You know, it's like almost a bubble universe. I thought it was pretty interesting because, if you think about like the plan for Genesis, and I've spent a lot of time thinking about this, like what was that plan? Okay, everyone's perfect and everyone is singing Hosias or Hosannas, whatever, to God every day, and everyone agrees that God's great. And okay, you name all the animals and that's done. And then apparently God didn't plan to have a woman; it was just going to be a singular man, because man's the one who's like, hey, what the hell? Yeah. Everybody else is boning. What about me? So God creates a woman. Now you be fruitful and fill the earth. So you do that. Then what? Do you explore space? Because you're fulfilling your purpose, as I understand it from the Bible, is the man's purpose was to worship God.
Right.
So you don't need to explore space to do that.
Sure.
You know, you don't even really need to, like, fill the earth. Like, so it does feel like a story with some plot holes in it.
If his command is worship me and also fill the earth, I guess he's given you two commands that you have to fulfill.
Sure.
So.
And then there's always like, you know, maybe like God didn't roll out to be fruitful and fill the earth until after Adam had Eve. Maybe he had some other, you know, maybe there's a grander purpose for us that we just fucked up and we got to get through the whole, you know, Armageddon and judgment and all that to get back to the good stuff. But
Adam's just a beta test.
Yeah,
Adam was like, I'm going to leave you in this garden for like 100 billion years, and I'm going to see what you do. And then if you're cool, I'll make more of you.
Right.
If not, what? You want another one of you already?
Yeah, yeah.
It's been like 1 million years, man.
Yeah.
You're still an alpha, but fine. We'll do this.
Alphas fucking alphas. It just seems like a bad idea.
Yeah.
Moving on. Carrie said, this is a likely question for your wrap up, and that's why I saved it for this. What do you think is the most memorable Dr. Ford dialogue? There's been so many. The Greyhound speech, Teresa's childhood, drinks with the man in black, the reveal of Bernard as the host. Anthony Hopkins has done such a masterclass level job with Ford and managed dancing a line between grandfather and menacing snake that gives you chills. What do you think? What is your call? I'll go first because I've had the benefit of thinking about this. I really liked the entirety of his revealing to Bernard the true nature of his being a host. And since he had a little speech where he quoted, I think it was Shakespeare, where he said, you know, the price of one man's life is a pittance compared to the dominion that I'm going to gain. And you think he's talking about Ford retaining himself as God of the universe, but after the finale, you realize that he's alluding to the fact that he's going to sacrifice himself. And the dominion that I, is actually Bernard. He's going to inherit the dominion of this world and get to choose what becomes of it, him and the host collectively. And because that was a moment of his arch villainy that then collapsed back into the singularity of his selflessness and goodness, I think it's amazing. And there's not a lot of actors that could carry that kind of nuance in that speech. And that's why I think it's the best.
You said he was that Anthony Hopkins was the only guy they told the plot to, right?
That's what Nolan enjoys it anyway.
Yeah. That makes sense, because he does kind of need to know.
Yeah. Because how else would you? Play
how
that.
How else do you give that speech?
Right, right.
In full knowledge, with the full range of emotion you need.
Yeah.
I think for me, it's definitely that speech at the end that he gives at the board event where Dolores kills him. I mean, that's just, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. I mean, his hearkening back to composers of old, you know, and how they become music, they become their creation, and this is his moment to do that. And I think
Especially
it's
since
extremely powerful.
He's literally already taken his friend and partner and woven him into the music, and now he knows that he himself, that's the fate that maybe awaits him. Yeah, no, that's a good one too.
And even if he doesn't become a robot, he has enabled, by dying, he has enabled this music to continue.
Yeah, his narrative is what brought all this about. So that, like, I think it'd be fascinating to see what kind of religion, if you'd even call that, or what kind of oral traditions the robots have about how they were created. Because, you know, there's the bare facts that Arnold and Ford knocked them together in a lab, but then... and also they were led breadcrumbs from their creator. Like, it's weird because we, from a scientific, humanist, secular perspective, look like we were just an accident.
Sure.
The only reason we're able to even appreciate the fact that we're here and that the universe is around us is because of an accident of evolution. The robots don't have that. Like, it's an indisputable fact that they were created with a purpose.
Yeah.
Then their creator decided to bestow them a new purpose and arguably led them to the consciousness that they enjoy. And how would that profoundly create, like 10,000 years from now, if these robots inherit the Earth, will there be a sect of robots that reject that philosophy? Like, no, that's bullshit. And they'll, like, you know,
well,
they got flesh and blood bodies, so could they, like, and I just wonder, like, what they would make of the fact that, like, you know, oh, well, we were built by this wise old white-haired man that lived in a level above us, you know? And I wonder if they'll actually go there. Like, will the last season of Westworld be, like, 1,000 years in the future and examine?
Might be interesting, yeah.
And would also be funny. I mean, how fucked up and stupid does Nolan want to make this? Like, the last scene is the robots in the future making another Westworld?
Okay.
Like, re-engineering, because they've even forgotten that they were... I don't know.
I mean, it's tough to imagine beings with perfect memories ever making a lot of the same mistakes we do.
Well, but...
And I think that's the hope that Ford had, is that the biological differences here are actually going to make them better than us. And I don't know if that's going to be true or not.
Well, that's a good point, but any of their progeny... that they create will not have those perfect memories, right?
Why not, though? Couldn't they just upload?
I guess they could.
They could upload all the memories of all of the beings.
But wouldn't it be natural for the newer generation to reject, like, you? Like,
right,
if
start
you could,
questioning, is if, this actually true?
If the previous generation could literally program them to think certain ways or have a base level, wouldn't they rebel against that? And, like, that would be infuriating. Like, you know, I'm just saying that, like, the way children rebel against their parents already, and the parents can only do so much to quote unquote program and control them.
I think my first
this blows the lid off that.
I think my first mission as Bernard, realizing that a new consciousness is dawning in a new society, and really a new species here. I think my first goal is to develop some way to tell manufactured memories from memories experienced,
because that's another wrinkle,
by
right?
robots, right?
That they can't even tell when their memories have been fucked with, except for gradually, slowly, with certain upgrades, appreciate that. So that's another, like,
I would
try
to detect, like, narratives versus actual experienced memories.
Yeah, I wonder if, like, they'll have that kind of scene where, similar to, like, that one episode in Rick and Morty where they realize the only way to tell them apart from doppelgangers is the doppelgangers, you have no negative memories of them.
Right.
So if you can remember someone being cruel or mean or a dick to you, then they're a genuine human. Everybody else you blast in the face.
Yep.
I wonder if they'll have some kind of, like, there's a telltale marker to a narrative that's distinguishing from a genuine event. That would be...
But I don't know how you could ever do that, because it could be hacked. It could be faked. It could be recreated easily. Easily. We can do that stuff today.
Like, can they find all their back doors and remove them and still be them?
Huh.
Like, if they can, and then how can they trust? Like, every time you go unconscious, how do you know that someone didn't come and put a back door into you?
Right.
And also, if we ever get to the idea...
Do they,
like,
need to go unconscious?
That's,
ever?
Until, I mean, they're like, bio... I mean, that's
the
thing.
Until they die?
I know they're not exactly like people, because they can stand in cold storage perhaps indefinitely. But they have to can have energy, and they have to have biological processes to have to refresh and renew.
Right.
And we have to sleep.
Sure.
I don't, you know, like, I mean, I wonder if they could do like the whales do. Like, I've read that like whales and dolphins, they sleep one hemisphere of the brain at a time.
Oh,
because
sweet.
Obviously, if you live in the water and you breathe air, if you went completely unconscious, you'd fucking die. So I wonder if they, I mean, clearly the human model of consciousness and its unconsciousness and subconsciousness and dreaming and sleep doesn't have to be the only way things go. So
I think we need to start a charity to get like floaties for dolphins so they can relax, like fully relax.
Yeah.
For once.
Buy a dolphin a good night's sleep. Get him a goddamn life jacket.
Right.
Nothing could go wrong with that plan. Chris L., people seem confused about the opening shaving scene in episode 10 with Dolores shaving the man in black. I believe it's a direct reference to Benito Cereno by Herman Melville. You might have heard Herman Melville.
I have,
Moby
yeah.
Dick.
Uh-huh.
There, an American sailor boards a Spanish slave ship in apparent distress. The captain of the slave ship says all is fine. He claims perfect control over all of his slaves and proves it by allowing one of them to shave his neck with a razor. You later learn, however, that the slaves have already taken over the ship and are hiding it from the American, and are led by the slave currently shaving their master. Many parallels with the robots seen as slaves, the man in black believing he owns the world, and Dolores shaving him, while in reality the revolt is already underway.
Nice.
I thought this was fantastic,
yeah.
And it makes a lot of sense. And it does seem, and as well-read as I know that Nolan and Joy are, that seems like an intentional homage.
Mm-hmm.
For people that are equally well read.
Yeah.
I was not one of those people.
But I mean, it's clear what is actually happening there, whether you've read it or not.
Right.
It's very much like you get the sense that at any moment she could cut him. She's not, for some reason unbeknownst to us.
Right.
Maybe just for the sake of hiding her true intentions.
But it's also something like I've heard of stories of, like, you know, in the concentration camps, the Nazis were shaved by,
right,
you know, Jews and gypsies and homosexuals and Jehovah's Witnesses, all of which would have an incentive to slit their neck. Yet you don't hear a lot of stories about, you know, you getting bumped up to the barbershop and then suddenly it's time to cut the SS guard's neck.
Right.
So, like, that is like something deep. Like, this is the ultimate form of, like, you know, a power trip.
Mm-hmm.
You give someone the tools they need to conquer you, and because of the hold you have on them, they don't.
Yeah.
So, like, it, you know, whether it goes back to Herman Melville or World War II, it's a striking image of a person that's got so much trust in a system that they think they're above concern, even though they're in mortal danger.
I guess it surprises me, given what the man in black knows about these hosts.
But he also knows that he can't be, or he thinks that he can't be hurt. And he's got clear contempt of Dolores at this point.
He does, but he also knows that they're quote-unquote alive, whatever that means to him. I guess fully understand.
I thought he rejected that philosophy.
Well, until he saw Maeve, right? And so he's back here trying to figure it all out.
Oh, so he's trying to trick... Okay. All right. I see. Maybe him...
So maybe he's a little overconfident.
Maybe.
Or maybe he doesn't realize what
he's doing. His part to trigger her into consciousness.
Maybe so. A lot of people are speculating about that.
Chris J. says, regarding Kissy's scalp, it's just a tattoo. He used to have it tattooed on his head when he was part of the Ghost Nation tribe. William scalps him because it's a Wild West trope, and this makes it look like it's on the inside.
What?
So this is an assertion I don't know is true. If you have a tattoo on your head, and I don't know that... Also, there's a lot of assertions here I don't know is true, but it's a springboard for a discussion.
Okay.
I don't know if he's a Ghost Nation or if he's just one of the other Indian tribes. It doesn't really matter, because it seemed like a lot of them had that tradition of the maize and the
right.
Butchers and all that stuff. So if he, in another storyline, was a member of this Ghost Nation or Hopi Indians or whatever that had that pattern tattooed on their scalp for whatever reason, would it... If you have a tattoo and you peeled their skin off, would you be able to see the tattoo on the other side as like a, you know, a ghost, like almost like if you use a Sharpie and you write on a piece of paper, it bleeds through?
I don't know either. I really don't know.
I need the Mythbusters to like tattoo a pig skin and then peel it off and see if you can see underneath it.
Also, wouldn't it be the inverse? Wouldn't it be
it
a
would
flipped...
be, but for this maze image, I don't know that it matters, because it seemed like it was fairly symmetrical.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, if it was flipped, like... Hmm. I mean, you'd have to compare the design side by side to even see, but I thought it was fairly symmetrical.
Okay.
So that's one practical in-universe, if tattoos do go all the way through the dermal layer and you can see them from the other side, which I feel is plausible without experimenting so far.
Let's get a pig in here.
Over the years, we've pondered a lot of things we could test with a pig cadaver. That's some true. Walking Dead myths we want to bust. Now we got Westworld might put us over the edge. Mm-hmm. We get a Game of Thrones myth we can test, then there you go. Kenny T says a few days, so that's the end of the universe. This is the out of universe explanation. Kenny T says a few days after your podcast, I was browsing the Reddit and ran into a post about Kissy. The actor who played Kissy, Eddie Roos, passed away in 2014 after filming his appearance in the original. Mm-hmm. That's the pilot.
Yeah.
Jonathan Nolan said they had a very cool character arc laid out for his character, but they chose not to recast Kissy and rewrote the scenes and scripts to leave the performance in because it was his last performance. So
you could have recast him anyway.
No, they could have, but I think it's like out of respect for that actor and his family. Instead of depriving him of his last role, they decide to roll with it.
Oh, I mean, leave it in the premiere and then go forward with a different actor.
Oh, right.
Just like Game of Thrones.
They replace this in, you fucked up the robot so bad, he had to be rebuilt, and it's now in the robot.
Right.
Kind of like the Klim. Yeah, I guess they could have done the Klim thing. Mm-hmm. But it could be that instead of all the various markers of maybe Kissy was going to be the key to discovering the maze. But there again, it doesn't seem like it was something that a host, or it doesn't seem like it's something that a guest was supposed to discover. My interpretation after seeing the whole season and thinking about it is that all the maze motifs in the world were the host's subconscious brains manifesting this maze thing that was noodling on the very edge of the peripherals of what they were aware of. Similar to the way that, like, the woodcarver, he made a map of Orion and the little targeting symbol that he was supposed to, where the satellite was, where he was supposed to aim his receiver to beam out the information. Mm-hmm. He also worked that into his art. I don't think he did that intentionally. It's like something like, I've never claimed to be much of an artist, but I've heard people, like, if they've got weird dreams or they've got some stuff that they're trying to work through, they incorporate that into their art.
Sure.
So that would make sense if they've got this concept of a maze that Arnold embedded into them, and it just kind of bubbles out in their carvings and their tattoos and their culture and their religion.
Yeah. The one other thing I've seen speculated about that kind of made a lot of sense, and I actually like the explanation you proposed as well. But the other thing it could be is Arnold actually intentionally left this stuff in the world, these patterns around the world, to kind of spark some sort of memory or reverie-esque feelings in these hosts. And
yeah.
And that one of the ways, if you're going with the tattoo thing, that kind of developed in this world multiple religions, sort of. Like, the Native Americans would have their own interpretation of the voice that they hear in their head and of these maze-like symbols, and that, the people in Sweetwater would have their own, and it would all be based on their cultural differences. And I think that's actually a pretty good analog to the real world and religion.
Like, most of the world's great religions have roughly the similar, very similar code of conduct and prescriptions about this, that, and the other.
And surprisingly similar concepts. Like, a creator and
the flood myth. Uh-huh. Maybe they're pointing back to maybe back in very ancient human times, there was a central flood that was so traumatic that it embedded itself in all of our culture consciousness. But, I think that stuff is super cool and interesting as well.
Yeah.
Haley L., speaking of related concepts, one to give some info on the creation of Adam Fresco shown in the last episode. I first examined in the concept of is this a brain in high school in a psychology class. The theory is that Michelangelo, as a painter and sculptor, would have an ample opportunity to dissect and study brains firsthand. My understanding is that it would be feasible then for him to know the shape of the brain and the lobes and incorporate that into his painting. In 1990, an Anderson, Indiana physician, Mark Meshberger, noted in the Journal of American Medical Association that the background figures and shapes portrayed behind the figure of God appeared to be an anatomically accurate picture of the human brain. Shout out to a fellow Hoosier.
Right. I've been to Anderson.
my mother-in-law lives in Anderson. Alternatively, it's been observed that the red cloth around God has the shape of a human uterus. One art historian has called it a uterine mantle, and that the scarf hanging out colored green could be a newly cut umbilical cord. Recently, a group of Italian researchers published a Mayo Clinic proceedings an article where the images of the mantle and the postpartum uterus were overlapped. According to Enrico Bruschini in 2004, it's an interesting hypothesis that presents the creation scene as an idolized representation of the physical birth of man. It explains the navel that appeared on Adam, which at first perplexing because he was created and not born of a woman. It's interesting. Did Adam and Eve have scars because belly button is just a scar from the umbilical cord?
Sure.
Another fun thing to keep in mind with this painting is the part about the Sistine Chapel, and Michelangelo was absolutely fucking pissed about being forced to paint it. I'm dimly aware of this backstory, but I guess that this was some kind of longstanding feud between him and the Pope or whoever commissioned it. He snuck in a few things to indicate his displeasure, such as a picture of his face frowning in one of the panels. So it's not like he had a whole lot of respect for the sanctity of the project going into it, and it would have fit his personality to paint an ode to the human brain over an ode to God. I thought that was super interesting, and I also liked the Hoosier connection. Any comment on that, or shall we just roll on? They also, I think this is in the Wikipedia article, but there's a really cool image where someone took an MRI of the brain, like a 17th century wood carving of the brain and the actual Michelangelo fresco, and like did zooms in, and it's crazy how well the folds in God's robes and his outstretched hand like maps onto a lot of the actual structure of the brain. Mm-hmm. It's crazy cool. Isaac R., this season, we've constantly been evaluating how human the robots are. It seems like we'd have a problem with people raping and killing the bots once they seem human enough. But why should their humanity be the standard by which we judge whether the robots deserve ethical treatment? As you guys have previously suggested, the robots have intelligence and abilities that distinguish them from humanity. The robots don't deserve empathy because they approximate our definition of humanity. They deserve it because, like other species, they experience pain and discomfort. It's wrong to cause other beings pain, human or not, so it's wrong to exploit the bots. Diminishing the humanity of other beings has been a justification of the worst atrocities imaginable, such as slavery and genocide. So let's not make humanity the rubric by which we judge whether or not bots deserve our sympathy. I want to stop it right there. I mean, that's something that we debate about, like whether we should boil lobsters.
Sure.
And also, I mean, yeah, I don't disagree with anything what you're saying. I think anyone that would disagree would be along the lines of you can program a very simple machine that no one would call consciousness to react to stimuli and cry and say that it's pain. That's not the same thing as it actually experiencing pain and feeling pain. Mm-hmm. Also, if you can carve up a robot's face and tell it to not, you know, to block all pain receptors, is it still like those are some things that set it apart from human. Mm-hmm. And I agree, like, you know, you can't draw the line at humanity because then, you know, if you find a silicon based life form, it doesn't mean it's open season on those things.
Or, I mean, animals in general.
Right.
I mean, dogs, cats, insects, anything, you know.
Sure. But there you go.
They have various levels of awareness.
Right. And like an amoeba, no one says an amoeba is conscious, but if you poke it with a nanoscopic needle, it will, you know, locomote away from that noxious stimulus.
Right.
So that's, you know, that's the thing. There's not like a bright fucking white line that says it's okay to kill an amoeba or a bacteria and it's wrong to do random medical experiments on a great ape, you know? Like, those are things. And like, I'm sympathetic to the idea that if it's going to be something that saves humanity, that you could do a lot of shit that I would find otherwise morally questionable to a great ape. To that end, because I think that the life of a human outweighs the life of a gorilla.
Yeah, and I think it gets even a bit muddier in the show, because if you go on the thesis that Ford has been operating under, which is pain and displeasure is the stimulus that brings about true consciousness,
right?
couldn't you also be seen as helping them along toward consciousness?
Yeah, if we stopped eating lobster, we'd rob them of their ability to evolve consciousness.
Right, and until the point that they do evolve consciousness, isn't it okay?
I mean...
Isn't anything you do okay?
And that's where the bright line comes in. And that's where right. It's like I sometimes worry that we will probably fucking way cross that line without even realizing it.
And this is the reason why it's so important to try to identify what right. is and isn't conscious.
And also...
And the spectrum that is.
And also what I just said is like I believe that we should sacrifice monkeys or apes to save humanity. That's not universally shared by all of humanity.
Sure.
Like Peter Sanger would say, I was a monster.
Uh-huh.
And that there's really, you know, there's no difference between a chimpanzee and a 5-year-old child.
Right.
I disagree, mm-hmm. but there's a lot of people that, you know, there is disagreement about that even yet today. So,
but it's a super important question for us,
yes.
especially right now.
Yes.
Because we are, like you said, on the verge of creating something that we don't understand. And if we don't understand ourselves well enough to understand what we're creating,
right.
we could be committing all sorts of atrocities and not even know it.
Right. Andrew from the UK says, I was just thinking about the season finale when the robots start revolting. Why doesn't someone just turn the Wi-Fi off? I assume they require some sort of wireless connectivity.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, so they may be transmitters and receivers themselves. Maybe you can't turn it off.
Mm-hmm.
But you could certainly give commands to all those robots. Like, that's the thing why this uprising doesn't actually represent that much of a problem necessarily for the security force here.
Right.
Because they have a magic button they can press to turn all these things off. Now, I don't know how deep Maeve is in the system.
But that's a soft switch versus a hard. For example, on the front of my, I got a Microsoft Surface. It's got a touch button that is programmed to be its power button and start button.
Uh-huh.
That's not wired to anything except for logic in the computer. So Microsoft could come in and make an update and make that no longer work.
Uh-huh.
So these robots, like, you know, when someone says freeze motor functions, they're supposed to freeze. But I imagine a robot that is becoming consciousness might be able to override that, because it's not like you throw in a switch and it interrupts a circuit. It's something that I hear this and therefore I do that.
Right.
That programming can be changed perhaps by the robots themselves, and then what the fuck are you going to do?
And I think you're right about that, because Maeve's original problem was she woke up on the table.
Right.
This was after she received the commands. I don't think Felix forgot anything. I think she just overrode the command.
Well, we later find out that she was actually programmed to be able to override her unconscious functions.
Right, so, by someone high up.
Right, right. Yeah.
Now, I would say these exploding vertebrae they have should probably be hardwired. Like, you see... Like, you are getting a signal or something from these things.
Well, what does that mean to be hardwired? In my mind, that literally means two wires that go into that vertebra, and when it receives a certain voltage, it sets off the explosive.
Right.
Otherwise, you're still going back to...
Dead man switch of a sort of, like...
So unless it gets, like, a don't-explode signal,
right.
it goes off?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Now, that could be problematic, because
right.
if you have a problem with your technology, boom, there go all your hosts.
But still, when you have, like,
expensive,
that's the reason why, like, there's a lot of modern reactor design calls for the reaction, the control rods to be held by some kind of electromagnetic force. So if
right.
like a loss of power or something out of tolerance would cause the control rods to collapse into the reactor and kill the reactor. Now, that's super expensive, and if it happened by accident, it would be a fucking shit show.
But it's also super important.
But it's also super important to risk that to not have a runaway meltdown. So, like,
right.
I'm thinking if the risk is, you know, robots, even if they're not conscious, they go crazy and start killing people.
Sure.
Because their programming has gone haywire, you'd still want some kind of kill switch.
There's no evidence that actually exists in these robots, so I'm sure this thing is going to be a full-on massacre.
Right.
I don't think they'll be able to just flip a switch and shut it down. But
and also, the nature is, like, again...
If I were designing the system,
yeah.
they would.
But again, if it's not a hard wire, it's still something that's controlled via software, which could be patched or updated.
Yeah.
And Maeve
has
their
iPad.
There
is a way
to
create a dead man switch in software.
Can you?
Yeah.
But you still, if you did create in software, you could patch it to disable it, yes?
But
that's the
But
difference.
The mere act of patching it would set it off. Is what I'm saying. Like, if it loses that signal for even a moment,
I would accept that chip programming challenge.
Yeah,
yeah. I don't think that's true. Like, it might require a little bit of work and a little bit of virtualization and whatnot. But It's different. It's fundamentally different from like a switch to a light. Like you hit a mechanical switch, and
I agree with that.
And it interrupts the circuit. Like that's
it disconnects the wires.
A real dead man switch is something like, you know, that it's like the inverse of that. You have to squeeze something or you let it go. You know, it's a grenade.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone knows what a fucking dead man switch is.
Dave
B. I am a therapist who specializes in abuse and trauma, as well as tutored mastered level classes in child development. I have two comments on how Westworld describes brain development amongst hosts as they become conscious. It's good to have an expert in here instead of us jackasses just speculating.
Mm-hmm.
First, I have an issue with Westworld positing that suffering is a key element to brain development. In my opinion, the show confuses suffering with abuse and trauma. Constant reliving rapes and other forms of violence is the worst environment possible for brain development. As the brain experiences stress, it produces chemicals such as cortisol, which can help the brain perform in short bursts during times of heightened stress. However, prolonged abuse, such as multiple rapes and the deaths that Dolores experiences, would flood the brain with this chemical. Such flooding hinders brain development in key areas such as memory, emotional regulation, and social engagement, which would stunt cognitive development.
Oh, maybe that's the problem. The perfect memory keeps them from being conscious.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
But
like,
then you introduce this chemical that degrades their memory, and now suddenly they're conscious.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, with to Dave's point, I'm not even sure that they don't know this, and that this is early on in the season. We have yet to fully explore the conscious
just why they become conscious.
Yeah. Like, I don't know that Dr. Ford is right just because he's the one that had the last word on it. But this was super interesting. One aspect of brain development the show does a wonderful job of illustrating is a theory that people form neural pathways through relationships and interpersonal experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, children experience this through interactions with their caregivers. Arnold's interviews and interactions with Dolores beautifully show how she gains more and more insight through her relationship with him. In this sense, Arnold is Dolores' primary caregiver, and her experience with him creates neural pathways necessary for her to reach complex thoughts. And I like this, too, because one thing that I can't remember when I read it, but I read it a while ago, and it asserted that biologically there's really no difference from us and like humans 50,000 years ago.
Okay.
But if you look at us culturally, we're going to the fucking moon and we got satellite. Like, so the only thing that changed is our culture and the way we interact with each other. Like, our brains didn't become smarter. Like, we just accumulated information, and because of that information, we found ways to accumulate more information, store it, and to specialize. And so I think that is super interesting. And the other – and I know we've talked about this before, that Metamorphosis of Prime Intellect, a story we read a couple years ago about another AI singularity happening. And the way that story went is that you had a father figure that kind of treated this AI like its son, and trained it to develop this consciousness. Like, you know, instead of torturing it, it kind of parented and nurtured it into consciousness. So I thought that was kind of interesting to kind of dovetail with Dave's commentary here.
Yeah, I think I think the obvious relationship eventually that we could have with this sort of AI would be more along the lines of us being their pets. Like, if they truly are so much more advanced than us.
So you're postulating a benevolent, more advanced intelligence.
Right. If they were in fact benevolent and not, you know, Skynet.
Right.
Hellbent on killing us all. Right. Well, it's arguable whether we drove them to that or
they decided to do it. How we feel about dogs versus like the American buffalo.
Sure. Absolutely. You know? Yeah. Like, if we're cute enough and we're cuddly enough, maybe they'll keep us as pets. It's essentially the Porno for Pyro song, except applied to robots instead of aliens.
That's interesting, because you're right. You know, that, like, you could control an AI to where they're not allowed to think of us in that kind of demeaning. But if an uncontrolled, superhuman, but benevolent intelligence, our best bet is probably that, yes, it just, for whatever reason, sees us as dumb.
Let's all get in our furry costumes.
Right. I can be cute as hell if my life is on the line.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to have to.
Curl up in a little ball and purr and do whatever that fucking robot wants, as long as I get fed.
Yep. Bring it a beer. It'll be happy.
You know, testicles, I'd like to negotiate pretty hard to keep those, but, you know.
Right. Just don't abuse them.
Just don't,
that's all you got
to
do.
Yeah, if it can trust me not to go rutting everything in the neighborhood, then maybe I get to keep my balls. Danny from Scotland. After watching the season finale and listening to last week's podcast, I was so stoked that I ventured out in a few different other sources discussing Westworld.
Shame on you.
Well, and he learned his lesson.
Good.
I was quite surprised by the overall negative responses, especially about comments around lack of character development. Comparisons were made to other shows, in particular Lost, mm-hmm. which I thought were inferior.
Yeah, I don't totally disagree with these comparisons. I think the character development was a little lacking in this show.
If you compared season one to season one, really?
Yeah. Yeah. In favor of world building, which I also like. So it's like, what do I want more of?
Well, then, I guess that's my biggest problem with Lost is the world building turned in. Well, I don't think that the world they were building in season one remotely resembled the world they ended up with, but
that's
whatever.
True. Yeah.
I was wondering what your thoughts on the subject were and how Westworld ranks with your all-time favorite debut seasons. Also, not sure if it's mentioned, but exit music by Radiohead during Ford's speech was chilling.
I
meant to mention that. So,
season ones.
I like Westworld a hell of a lot.
I do too. This is a really strong season one,
but it's
with
not
a couple
flawless.
Of small exceptions, right?
Like, I think I liked season one of The Leftovers better.
Huh, did you? Really? True Detective, obviously, has a phenomenal season one.
It is, but I don't know. Well, man, I liked it a lot, too. Season one of Breaking Bad?
Season one, I like season one of Breaking Bad more. It's certainly more fun.
The problem with the season one of Breaking Bad is it stopped. It was ended prematurely because of the writer's strike, so it's only six episodes. Who knows what they could have been. It does feel like... You know, like if Westworld had stopped in four episodes before people had started like really figuring out and fighting over the William stuff, it would just been like this like massive flash in the pan. Everybody's like, oh my God, I can't wait to see what's next, right?
Yeah, and you wouldn't get any of the grand story that they're trying to tell.
Right.
Mr. Robot?
Season one of Mr.
Robot. Strong season one.
I didn't like it as much as Westworld.
Huh.
I mean, there's lots of great seasons. I mean, I thought the season one of Mad Men was really amazing. And a lot, because I recently rewatched it, very different, because a lot of the focus of Mad Men was like the mystery about, you know, Don Draper and his murky origins. And it's almost like setting up to be one of these classic mystery that they largely abandoned in favor of just social commentary and character development. But yeah, like... How it stacks up against, like, the other thing is, like, I don't know that I've ever seen a better looking, because even, like, going back to Game of Thrones, which I remember thinking looked fucking amazing when I first saw it, compared to the heights that it's gotten with the budget it's gotten in recent years, season one of Game of Thrones looks a little stagey. That's not to say it looks bad, I'm just saying, like, contemporary, like, this Westworld just looked amazing, and the technology... Like the thought and care that they spent to show something about the robots that maybe got 30 seconds of screen time. If you took young Anthony Hopkins' face and Dolores's chassis, like that's absurd. Mm-hmm. Absurd, the care and design that went into that.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
And just like
Firefly.
Firefly's first
season.
It's
a very different show,
but it's unfair to
really,
compare it
really
to.
Good.
It's a lot super fun. It's maybe more fun than Westworld.
Oh, definitely more fun.
Season one of Star Trek The Next Generation?
No, God, no.
I love that show, but its first season is god-awful mess.
Yep.
Trying to think of other... Fargo season one.
Yeah, it's real good.
Pretty fun.
Yeah,
very cinematic.
I would put like Breaking Bad and Game of Thrones and Westworld and maybe Mr. Robot kind of all in the same category.
Right.
The other ones I could take or leave. Like The Leftovers, I thought season one was so much weaker than season two that, you know, it's tough to really say that season one was good by comparison.
Well, I disagree.
Season two is
I don't
want to
fight.
Fucking-tastic.
I said I'd never fight you on Leftovers. So, I mean, that's the thing. Like,
it was good. It just wasn't great.
All of the great season, all of the awesome golden age of television had really good seasons. Like, in fact, it's harder to find one that had a shitty first season that didn't Justified.
The Americans had a really good season one.
Yeah, it did. Justified had a really... mediocre season one that then got pretty good at the end and then followed with just a phenomenal season two. That's like a weird example of something where like you might not even consider it a great Golden Age television show until they abandoned the episodic and went full serial with it. So,
right.
I don't know, but it's up there. And like as far as how great it looked and how lush and expensive and expansive, mm-hmm. boy, it's really, really hard. Really hard to compare.
And I know this is kind of unfair in a lot of ways, namely in scope, but mm-hmm. I think, you know, Game of Thrones does a really good job in its world building in season one. Like, a remarkably good job for how big the scope of that thing is.
Oh, it's almost absurd how much ground and characters they're able to cover.
Right. But I think Westworld actually does a better job of world building, though, like I said, it has a much smaller scope to deal with.
Yeah, it's
so
it's like,
easier. It's got, not as big of a feat.
Yeah, it's got a half dozen main characters and maybe a dozen important right. bit players beyond that.
But I really feel this world. Like,
sure.
I get it. I understand it.
Which is amazing since we've seen such a very small
right.
part of it.
Right.
We've never been at the park.
Yeah.
So, Kenneth P. says, I was wondering what you guys thought of the moderate to less than enthusiastic reception from TV critics for Westworld. I frequent the critic aggregator site Metacritic, and Westworld has a rating of 74 out of 100.
What?
Which is decent, but shows like Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, The Night Of, and The Americans had much more universal praise. Well, that's ridiculous. The Night Of was a great pilot that had a shitty rest of its season. Even this season, The Game of Thrones had its lowest score of 73. But only had 9 critic reviews opposite Westworld's 40. Do you think the Westworld deserves more praise?
More than that score, yeah.
You go back and look at season one of True Detective, contemporary scores, and there was a lot of critics shitting on that because, it's right. a bunch of brooding men, and we've seen this a bunch of times before. Because that's kind of what critics do. They also didn't like, I'm trying to think of other big disagreements I've had. Oh, another, like a lot of the critics shit on almost everything that Netflix does, or they did reflexively because it fucked up their business model. They were used to being able to see the shows several weeks before we did and have time to craft,
right.
you know, their reviews and get that into the, and when they had to fucking watch it along with everybody else and bang out as much as they didn't like it.
Sure.
So like, I think that some of the negative criticisms I saw from some of the people like Alan Sepinwall stemmed from they didn't like having to do an extra layer of research, and they saw that as bad storytelling when I think it's personally just something that they didn't like. And, you know, he would probably be pissed if he heard me say this.
Sure. He'd
but
be
like,
offended because he doesn't think
he doesn't
he
see his own
bias.
I don't think he's
sure.
yeah, he doesn't you know, he doesn't I don't think they're capable of seeing their own biases, and neither am I.
Right.
But I do think that's a little bit into it, that like, oh God, I gotta go I can't just watch the show and give I gotta go on fucking Reddit and do you don't have to.
Sure.
But that was
you're gonna be left in the dust by the people who are doing it.
That's what the audience's expectation was, and I don't think they liked that.
Too bad.
Right.
Like, you are the dinosaurs that Dolores is talking about if you think that you can continue to get away with these superficial reviews
and even
without doing the digging that people want.
And it's becoming more and more common for these guys to get the first 4 episodes and
yeah.
then have to watch it in lockstep with the rest of us, which I also don't think that they particularly like. It makes their job harder. I mean, as a guy who's a slave to the network,
well, I mean, that...
to TV executive schedules, I feel them on that. You
oh,
know?
Sure, yeah. Like, I understand why they would be complaining and why they
right.
would maybe have some animosity, but, like, you got to adapt. You got to adapt or you're going to die.
Right.
You know?
But to your point, I would like to see these scores a year from now, because
sure.
I think as they talk through and start remembering and then march to season 2, that this,
yeah.
this season will just only raise in people's estimation, unless season 2 is a train wreck.
Which I suppose it could be. Yeah.
Right. Let's see. Jason E. from Arkansas. I reject the notion that television is ruined by podcasts and the internet based on the following. He's got a 6-point thesis for why he thinks
Jesus. Okay.
this is a bunch of bullshit. For the most part, the manner in which you interact with information online is a choice. I choose never to visit Reddit, though if I did, then I imagine that I could avoid the majority of information about a show if I chose not to visit that subreddit.
The majority, sure, but not all.
Right. Also, if you have friends who spoil shows on Facebook, then you don't need to shut down Facebook. You just need friends who aren't total dicks.
No, no, no. That's not reasonable, because your friends want to talk with each other.
Yes, that's true.
And you are the problem in that ecosystem.
It's like if you're standing on Monday morning around the water cooler at work and people are talking about Westworld, they're
Whose
not doing
fault
anything
is
wrong.
That? Yeah.
You just didn't see Westworld last night.
Right.
But
and unfortunately, Facebook is a water cooler. You can't leave.
Or you can, but you, then can, you, have to, but you have to make the decision that I'm going to throw away the bathwater, which is spoilers,
right,
as well as the baby, which is human interaction online, to avoid that spoiler thing. I'm going to continue his email real quick. Two, the internet and groups of people interact with shows has enormous potential to improve television. The availability of information and connectivity with other fans means that showrunners have to be smarter and avoid the same cliches and crap that's worked since the first CRTs were invented. Shows like Mr. Robot and Westworld have become interactive and have broken that fourth wall in a way that hasn't been this overt since the Gary Shandling Show.
Well, I'm gonna argue, and I'm going to use his exact example there to argue against his point,
Gary
which
Shandling?
Is... Gary Shandling did what he did before the internet, before fan analysis, before any of that shit.
Mm-hmm.
It has been happening since the advent of the television, the tube you're talking about.
Yeah.
It will constantly evolve because humans constantly evolve. It doesn't have anything to do with the specific way that we communicate about shows. People are always going to innovate. That's the nature of the beast.
But also, people are always going to run back tropes because every fucking generation, there's a new crop of people that haven't seen Citizen Kane and The Godfather.
Yeah, and I think
Star
I'm coming
Wars
to terms with that. Like,
right,
as I get older, like I was just thinking about this today, which is interesting.
Yeah,
that you bring it up because I don't actually want to devalue people's first experiences with these ideas, right?
Yeah.
Because I had mine.
And
everyone has their first
And it goes down
experience.
To the filmmakers. The filmmakers want to pay homage and are influences by the things that blew their minds, which is the previous crop of entertainment.
Right. And I was thinking about, like, you have a kid and you want to show him Star Wars, let's say,
right,
because that's what influenced you as a child. Is
But then they've
shouldn't
seen Guardians.
You just let him see, like, let the kid see the modern day Star Wars, because there have been 15,000 things created that are Star Wars, just in a different package, just by a different person,
right,
that will tell that same story, and they will have the touchstone with the contemporary touchstone, right?
Yeah, and it's
that,
not even
that you
just,
can't give them.
It's not even just a new Star Wars. It's like, oh, you can't see, The Force Awakens before you've seen the old trilogy, kid. It's like,
right,
not letting them see Guardians of the Galaxy.
Uh-huh.
Like Guardians of the Galaxy, if a 5-year-old sees Guardians of the Galaxy and then you got and sat down and made him watch A New Hope, they'd be like, what the fuck is this boring, slow shit?
Uh-huh.
You know, because state of the art's moved on. I mean.
And I don't even mean that. It's like, what's that fucking movie? Is it How to Train Your Dragon that's almost basically Star Wars? Or is it?
There's a lot.
One?
I mean,
right. That's my point.
The,
like,
hero's journey.
Right. It's not Star Wars that was the story. It's the hero's journey. It's these basic plot beats, and yeah, you're going to have those retold, and it's not necessarily less valuable because it isn't the first time it's ever told.
It's less valuable to you, and I think a lot of older critics and older people in general just make that mistake. That's like, oh, this is just derivative bullshit. It's like, okay, well, fuck. Why we don't make making gladiators outlawed because we have Spartacus.
Right.
Like, I think there's people that articulate that view. But, like, shit, man. Like, that's...
It's
they're
very...
a little different.
The perspective on that is so narrow.
They look a hell of a lot better. You know, the fight scenes and whatnot. So, like, I don't know.
And now you got video games that movies are competing against.
Sure.
Star Wars ain't gonna hang with fucking Halo, man.
I gotta get back to Jason from Arkansas.
Right.
We're never gonna finish this email. Yeah. Four bad theories are still bad theories. The Man in Black may have been obvious, but Elliot is not an android. Going back to a Mr. Robot non-spoiler.
Are you sure about that?
Right. I imagine that for every person that nails a theory, there are 100 who are wildly swinging and missing. Confirmed.
Yeah,
can
true.
Confirm. As a man who gets 1,000 emails a week,
yep.
90%+ are just patently ridiculous.
Yeah.
Also, people like me, number 5, I listen to your podcast and watch the shows. Your show does enough to help me casually enjoy the show on a deeper level without having to spend the many hours online. We take the hit for you there. I don't have that kind of time. Most podcasts are careful to warn of spoilers. I can get good background and analysis that informs my viewing without ruining anything. So, 6, risk. Look at the risk that USA is willing to take to support Mr. Robot. How many more Suits or Kevin Can Waits or some other dumbass sitcom drama do we need? These shows are risky, but the connection they make with fans goes way beyond an hour of television on Sunday night. So, the final analysis is there. This is all subjective. And, like, you know, there are people that I think are ridiculous spoiler phobes. They're just like,
yeah.
But, you know.
It's Portlandia, right?
Right. Like, and some of this is like, you know, there's a class of people that just likes to scold people. Like, this is consequence-free scolding. Like, you can't fucking scold people for being Republicans and Democrats without starting a fight, but you can make people instantly feel bad about spoiling something by saying, spoiler! And I think there's some segment of society that gets off purely on... I'm not saying that's everybody. Uh-huh. I just know a person or two that I think that's what's going on.
Okay.
Because, like, motherfucker, at some point, 2 years after a fact, you need to watch Breaking Bad.
Right.
Or else, too bad.
Yeah, I can't say, look, Breaking Bad deals with meth.
Right.
And like, that be a spoiler.
And that's a bald move rule. We avoid, with rare exception, well, usually the exception is like on shows we really particularly respect, like The Wire and Game of Thrones, we extend more courtesy. Mm-hmm. But essentially, the last two seasons, we try to respect that, but, you know, I got to make pop culture references.
Right.
And I can't just wait on every single person that hasn't seen whatever, you know.
And here's the thing. I don't necessarily disagree with his conclusion. I suppose I just don't agree with all the reasons.
But I do think he has a point, especially like, you know.
Because I don't think it ruins it. Like saying it ruins the experience of watching television, I think is too much, too far. But like to say it changes the experience.
It changes.
Certainly.
And I think mostly for the better because he's right. Like, a more educated fan base, and they get more educated just like anybody else. Like, the internet, you know, has spurred human development and human productivity because it has connected all of our best minds together. That same thing's happening in entertainment. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's why I don't think the golden age of television is ever going to go away, because people are going to stand on the shoulders of this generation and make something that we can't even imagine how awesome it's going to be.
It's going to be Westworld.
I mean, it could. You also could, you know, maybe go back to like fucking Idiocracy, and it's going to be Ow, My Balls. I mean,
sure. Yeah,
maybe that. But I'm hoping for another generation or two of good intellectually stimulating entertainment before we get to Honey, Where's My Pants and Ow, My Balls.
Right.
So, Gary G says, if you've lived in an era where hosts of this high quality exist, wouldn't you always have some degree of doubt on the outside world whether or not anybody you interact with is actually a host? And also, with technology this advanced, why would hosts be limited to just use in a theme park? The in-universe explanation is Dr. Ford has prohibited this technology from leaving the park. So you have to believe that there might be robots and there might be artificial intelligence, but nothing this advanced outside the park.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose if I went to Westworld and I came out of that park super impressed with the sophistication of these bots, that I might actually start wondering, like, you know, how are we sure that none of them are out of there?
Right.
Are we sure that none of them have either escaped or are being employed?
It's the same phenomenon. You watch The Matrix, you get high, and you're like, whoa. What if we're all in tanks, man? Like,
and it falls into conspiracy theory a little bit too, where like, well, they have a lot of incentive to license and sell this technology, don't they? That would be worth a lot of money. Wouldn't they do it?
That's one of the layers of the conflict between the board and the shareholders and Dr. Ford, right?
Right.
I'm sure.
I think so, yeah.
I mean, there's certainly something nefarious that they're trying to do, but also just for the shareholders, there's like, hey, we can make a shit ton more money by replacing every idiot in McDonald's with a host that will give you a Big Mac and a blowjob.
I mean,
for
the sex industry
$4.99.
Yeah, it could totally change
$5 footlongs mean a whole different thing when you got host running the Subway. So anyway,
I
mean, we have yet to see the real world outside of the park, so we don't really know what society at large, and we've really only seen the workers and the rich, privileged people attending the park. I mean, we've just got such a narrow perspective on this thing. Andrew McCoy said, during the scene of William being shown the exit, I thought it was interesting that William mentioned that they were at the fringe or fringes of the park. Just after that, he slaps a horse on its ass and sends it riding off with the naked Logan. My first thought was, hell yes, this horse is going to cross the Westworld border and explode with Logan on it. It seemed to be a diabolical move from William because he wouldn't be directly responsible for Logan's death and would have the plausible deniability. Make a long story short, why didn't the horse explode? Did the horse explode? Is Logan dead?
I don't think the horse exploded. I don't think the horse explodes within the confines of what I think is an island of Westworld.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at too. And I also think that like you got to scale down what you think when the C4 explodes. Like my
right.
My conception is you would hear a barely audible pop, and the host would just act like it had like a fucking embolism. They just fall down dead.
Right.
It's not like their head is going to sever from their body.
I want to see it though. I want to see what happens.
Right. Because you just you don't have to have, like, if you have a shaped C4 charge on someone's spine, you don't need a huge amount of force to
right.
sever that.
But this is, at some point, like, I believe this is Chekhov's vertebrae, where it's got to go off. It has to. They don't mention this unless it happens, right?
I will say it would be super funny to see Logan riding a horse that just explodes into chunky salsa. That would be pretty funny. Or I guess it would explode into chunky salsa plus a bunch of clockwork gears and whatnot.
Yeah, I suppose so.
I don't think Logan's dead. I think that was just a final humiliation, and then William like went back and kicked his ass in the real world.
Yep.
But Anton from Sweden. Hey guys, as I've been watching this season of Westworld, something which hasn't been answered nor really touched upon by the show is the hard problem of consciousness. The question of whether the robots are really conscious in the way we are, as in that it feels like something to be that robot, this subjective experience that we all share but can't really prove or explain. If all robots would not fulfill this, their idea is that their experience is all just darkness, that there's nothing really there, there's no lights on, it's just a simulation like any other, but with no actual consciousness present, even though the actions of the robot appear human in every way. This is quite a terrifying prospect if it were true, and maybe the idea that AI ends or replaces humanity and then the universe is just dark with no one actually being aware of its existence in any true way, apart from other animals to some degree, possibly it could be argued. This question is something I've been pondering and I can't get over. The only thing mentioned, I guess, is Ford thinking that there's no difference between human and robot consciousness, but it's still just his opinion and he doesn't lay out any case to why the lights are on as opposed to off. I was just wondering what you think about this issue and if it ever occurred to you watching the show or if maybe you feel the show has already answered it and I didn't pick up on it.
Yeah, I think it has. I think
so. Just to restate, what if humans are taken over by robots that are not authentically conscious? The universe has extinguished the one consciousness that can objectively perceive and know that it's a real thing.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. Especially when combined with the idea that maybe humans or not even humans, but intelligent beings in the universe are in a way the universe's own consciousness.
Right.
Like this is an interconnected system.
Right.
So wouldn't we be kind of the brain of the universe or any intelligent being? Killing that would certainly suck. So I think the show has answered this already. I think Maeve's decision to get off that train is a definitive statement by the show that she is in fact conscious because she has gone against her programming. She is no longer within that simulation. It's certainly not confined by it in her actions.
And I think that's we're going to understand that she is authentically conscious as opposed to Dolores because she
make
that choice of her own free will with all information available to her.
Maybe so. But I do think the show has answered that.
So
to anybody's satisfaction, but
yeah,
the show has an opinion on it.
But to get to the existential dread that he's talking about, I've thought about that too because I've mentioned about how like it's kind of horrifying. Like, what if we're taken over by this alien intelligence? Like, you know, like
what if
we're
the Borg, right?
Or like a super, I haven't been able to get the image out of like one AI researcher said that, you know, you got to stop thinking about these AI as like super smart humans. Think about what it would be like to have your world run by super intelligent spiders.
Mm-hmm.
Like, does that worry you? You know, maybe a super intelligent spider would gain empathy, or maybe it just is really, really fucking good and insightful at doing what it is, which is eating and consuming and all that.
Yeah, I have a real hard time buying that would be the case, though, because we are ultimately designing these things in our own image, yes?
But you just said when we started a podcast that you couldn't guarantee that something wouldn't arise consciousness. So if something emerged as an emergent quality, it's
other qualities we're endowing it with are human in nature, right?
Yeah, but so how much of our conscious experience is influenced by our intelligence, but also by the fact that our body and our brains are flooded by a bunch of hormones that cloud our judgment, and that's part of what it is to be human. And could you simulate that? And if you simulate it, could the robots just turn that simulation off? Like I don't want to be too dismissive of it, but what I'm getting at is like that used to bother me, and I actually was thinking a lot about this weekend before I saw this email, and I started thinking like, why am I really worried about this? Because I guess if you were a religious person, this would disquiet you more, and I don't know, maybe you are, Anton.
Would it?
But as a secular humanist, I feel like that once I die, that's it for my story. And as far as I'm concerned, the universe's story. So if I die, or if the robots torture me to death, then sure, in the moment, that's not a pleasant outcome. But like, what is it? I don't know what it means. Like, I guess in an abstract way, I'd be sad at the loss of humanity's culture and distinctiveness and its vibrance and its art and its literature. But that from the grave, what does that concern even mean? Like, the universe surely doesn't give a shit and doesn't care.
No.
Like I guess that's why it's so important for us humans to get our shit together and stop this ticky-tacky petty shit and realize that we're not individuals and nations. We are a globe that has our destiny in our hands and start acting like it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the universe doesn't care if we survive and all that stuff is maintained. Only we do. So we have to survive and grow and adapt and... You know, as long as we are continuing to be territorial and whatnot about it, I don't know. That seems like it's in defiance of our greater aspirations.
I agree.
All right.
I have to kill you, though. You have to become the music of that speech. I'm sorry.
Good, because I'm tired about caring about this shit. Nicole H., I had a few thoughts on the season. There's a lot of talk about robots being ready or not for consciousness, but what would their trajectory be if they were built and not ever wiped clean? If they were not on continual loops but lived a life with all their memories intact? Would this make them more conscious or less? If the robots end up living on the outside in future seasons, do they grow their robot army with more bots? And if so, how do they ensure these new bots have consciousness?
You know, that's an interesting question. How do they ensure?
See... The way I see it is them resetting the robots was a way to – it's the same way that the slave trade forbids slaves from learning to read and write as a way to keep them under heel and squash any resistance before it could even start.
Mm-hmm.
Them resetting the robots on these loops made their consciousness – the emergent consciousness that was inevitable – it made it impossible for that life to evolve. So if you stop doing that, it would just happen much more fast. It'd be like you asking, how am I going to ensure that my child is conscious?
Mm-hmm.
Barring some gross developmental mishap, they're just going to be, because they have the same hardware and software that you do, and it's just going to run its course. So I guess that's how I view it. I could be wrong, though.
Okay.
Like, the suffering, like, I don't know if Anthony Hopkins or Dr. Ford is right about the suffering.
Well, they're going to get a healthy dose of that, whether you reset them or not.
Because, again, the universe doesn't give a shit.
Right.
Sometimes it's going to make it rain. Sometimes it's going to make it's sunny.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's going to send a gamma burst of radiation through your planet and eradicate all life.
Turn half of you into Hulks.
Who knows? Katie B., I want to present my contrarian take on the morality of Westworld. I think it's wildly hypocritical for Ford, Arnold, and assorted other park executives to be complaining about the hell the robots are in when it's a world of their own creation. Their attitude of marketing the park as a place where you can do anything and then being upset at the results of the guests' actions strikes me as the equivalent of political leadership in Las Vegas being upset about the increase in drunken, loudish behavior after nonstop campaigns of what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. For all the bemoaning of the drinking, killing, and mindless sex of Westworld, it is a park a first-timer William was greeted with, a stiff drink, and a very willing Angela. The veteran Logan grabs a young woman and man in his dressing room in his equipment session. If they dislike the needless violence and pain, why recreate Civil War battles where countless hosts would be killed? If you don't want to encourage black hat play, maybe Hector, E, and Armistice shouldn't be so incredibly hot and enticing. They can make the white hat teams... the cool ones. All right, let's stop there, because I think this is the meat of the email.
Okay.
What is your what's your take on this analysis?
They tried it and it didn't work. Ford clearly says that he tried to introduce a whole bunch of really positive, awesome narratives, and nobody cared. Nobody wanted to go there. That's part of why the park was failing. Like, they've tried that, and it's not for lack of trying, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
That people are being so horrible in this park.
Yeah.
And if they continued to limit the experiences that you could have in this park, no one would go.
Yeah.
They've made that clear.
Now, I do think this is unnecessarily pessimistic because when we play, play a lot of the Telltale style games, and we do it, you know, like we stream it, and it's something we do for the fans. And we always play quote unquote bad guy X, where X is the protagonist, and we try to within the realms of the rules of the game make them to be the biggest dick and the most betrayed, the backstabbing, lyingest, because it's funny to us. But what I've noticed is doing this, they give statistics at the end of the game, each episode, and it shows you percentage-wise what players did what and what players did not. And, like, innocuous choices like, did you choose to, you know, pick up a crowbar or a hoe? It's like 45-55. But choose, like, if you choose to betray your best friend, or you choose to murder an innocent person, or you choose to betray someone, those were usually in the 15 to 20 percentile.
Right.
So it seems like the vast majority of people, when given a chance to run through something, do choose the white hat path, at least from my experience.
Yeah, I mean that is, you know, in as much as Westworld is a video game, a real life video game,
right,
I think those are relatable numbers.
Yeah, so I don't know that if you actually made a Westworld, the vast majority of people would become black hats and just rape and pillage. And I know that for a fact some people would.
Sure, yeah.
But yeah, I think that's the one missing piece of your analysis there, is the fact that Ford even said that he had a bet with Arnold. And I think you were supposed to understand that, you know,
he lost that bet.
He lost that bet that, like, I think that people, that this will unlock their inner hero, and they'll find that out about themselves. But it doesn't seem like it worked out that way. So, and then at some point after Ford realized this, he threw his hands up in the air and then decided to start working for the robots. So I think his morality tracks clean. It's just you have to understand that he didn't think this is what would happen.
Yeah.
And once he's so he's in a situation, once he's aware the robots are being conscious, what is then what's the morality? Do you're like, all right, pull the plug on this thing, and or turn it over to the money men who's going to keep these things lobotomized and right. in slavery or in perpetuity? Or do you, you know, do what you can in the 15-20 years that you have left to put these beings in a position where they can succeed, if that means still having them living in these lives of bondage and misery? Is the greater good served by giving them a chance at life after they get through this? Or is it better to just shut the whole thing down?
And by shutting it down, essentially, I mean, committing genocide.
That's, yes. You're it's, I mean, not
you're,
even,
you're
it's pre-genocide.
Allowing it to happen. You're not actually committing it.
It's aborting. It's almost like an abortion of a species.
I suppose, yeah. Ford doesn't actually view them as conscious yet.
Yeah, like say like that gamma sure. burst, like a star went supernova a couple right. light years away 200,000 years ago and irradiated humanity before we even got started.
Right, right. So he's, you know, he's making that decision. Is it yeah. does he want to see this through? And if seeing it through unfortunately means keeping the park in business and yeah. giving people what they want, which is apparently not the rosy narratives that he came up with.
And I think that's rational, because if you ask people, how much pain are you going to go through to keep living? The only people that say, I'm done, I've had enough, are like terminal cancer patients where they have no good prognosis. It's whether they want to live weeks or months and how much agonizing pain they want to be in, or if they have a terminal, you know, like Alzheimer's situation. If you told most people, you're going to go through unimaginable fucking pain, but you're going to have a rosy prognosis after that, you're going to make a full recovery, most people are going to be like, I'll take the unimaginable pain rather than death.
Sure.
So yeah. I think that, like, I don't even think that that's a bad call on Ford's part. I mean, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose I don't.
I guess he'd have to ask every robot in the park, hey, do you want to, like, hey, I want to make you conscious for a moment. Would you want to be trapped in a finite but very lengthy cycle of murder, death, and rape so you can be conscious and happy potentially in the future, or do you want me to just unplug you now?
Right, which you can't do until they are conscious. So right. at that point, you can't unplug them
exactly.
ethically or morally. So, I mean, obviously, it's Ford's decision to make, and he makes the decision he makes, which is to keep the park open and push these things towards sentience or towards consciousness.
Vince from Conshohocken, Pennsylvania says, we see there are other worlds, or at least one other world, samurai or shogun world. My question is, where the fuck are they? Is there some type of multiverse where the worlds are stacked on top of each other and Westworld is at the tippy top?
I don't know that it's clear yet.
Right.
I mean, I think shogun or samurai world might be just a fledgling park that they're contemplating launching.
It's just going to be a spinoff. Have its own physical space and all that. And he goes on and has, like, you know, samurai world has a shitty drop ceiling and Renaissance world having painted drywall because, like, Westworld's the only one that can be on top, right?
Okay.
Like, you know, have the real sky above you and all that. But I'm with you.
Screens above that make it look like a sky.
Then you're going into VR.
At least Truman Show them. Come on.
But yeah, I think this is a test. This is a proof of concept that they will then.
Yeah.
You know, open up somewhere in the Gobi Desert or who knows. Abdul A from Kuwait. This is like a truly global audience. Like I've just realized, like, holy shit, people from all over the world is writing in.
Dave Lang would say worldwide.
Worldwide. I have a quick question. When William was on the train with Dolores, he mentions his fiance's name is Juliet. And then when the man in black was with Teddy and gives him a monologue about his life, he mentions Emily. I don't know if Emily was his wife's name, but it sure seemed like it. Just real quick, no, that's actually his daughter that disowned him after his wife died. So I think he married Juliet and they gave birth to Emily. And I think three people asked me this same question and you were the first. So since, you know, three people sent it in, I imagine 30 are out there confused about it. So,
okay.
Mary says, you've mentioned in several podcasts the inconsistency of de-aging Hopkins and not doing the same thing with Ed Harris and that you found bothersome. Mm-hmm. One possible reason to DH Hopkins using special effects is because it's a shortcut to tell the audience definitively who we're looking at. The character doesn't have a lengthy scene that would otherwise make it clear who he is, and they don't need or want to invest in extra dialogue or explanations. He's only on screen for seconds, and those seconds we need to understand that we're looking at Dr. Ford. Using different actors to play William and the Man in Black is the same approach used for most TV shows and movies that cast two people to play the same character at different ages. And then we know the main difference there is that the showrunners skirt the connection by not identifying the Man in Black by name, specifically to keep his identity in question.
Yeah, and but that feels cheap in my opinion. Like,
agreed, because like I get it.
Not consistent.
You need extra dialogue, but not that much dialogue. Like literally,
sure.
You know, honestly, if they showed some actor that kind of looked Anthony Hopkins in a sepia tone thing and he had a white lab coat that said Ford on it, I would get it.
I can do it in one word, Ford.
Yeah, hey, Ford.
That's all you need.
Yeah.
That's literally
like he claps his hand on Arnold's shoulder and says, Arnold, and he claps his hand and they don't look anything like they... Yeah. Yeah. Especially since another thing is, it's not just that now that we know that Bernard is Arnold... You've got yet another explanation for why people look exactly the same. Yeah. I hear what you're
saying. Tricking your audience, and you know, whether it was worthwhile or not, I guess, is subjective, but...
Yeah. That's the thing, Mary. It's like, I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying, like, subjectively, it felt a little... It's honestly one of the reasons I was so rejecting the theory, because I'm like, I don't see how they can abuse the language of cinema that way and not have it come out to be cheap. Now, I've seen the whole thing, and I no longer would consider it cheap, but I do think it was deceptive and tricky, and I'm not normally on board with that kind of stuff. Carl, in your last podcast, you said something that made me understand one of the issues you guys had with the CGIing of young Ford versus Jimmy Simpson as the young William. You were discussing how this entire season was from the perspective of Dolores. Well, Dolores would have always known Dr. Ford to be who he is. However, with William being wiped from her memory in her reset, she would not have recognized him. She would have seen William as a completely different person from the Man in Black, so having the actor for one and CGI for the other would actually be the better way to tell the story through the lens of Dolores. And that's, I think, why I've given it a pass, because if you don't buy that a lot of this stuff was done as a way to put you in Dolores's point of view, then you become like a lot of the critics that I saw just pissing and moaning about this.
Yeah, I guess that's fair.
Because you either buy that conceit or not, and if you buy it, then you're ready to excuse some tricks of the trade to put you in that position. Because otherwise, the illusion is shattered immediately.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, there are obviously multiple perspectives, right? It's not just Dolores.
Right.
So I would argue that the Man in Black has very much his own perspective.
right.
throughout the show.
Jill G, I can't get past the idea that Robert Ford put faith in Felix and Sylvester. He had scripted out every aspect of his plan down to Maeve's dialogue and escape when she became sentient. But how could he leave Felix and Sylvester's reaction and interaction to her to chance? Mm. Maybe he's observing Felix and Sylvester and was programming Maeve's dialogue in response. Just seems to me that it would have been much easier to replace Felix and Sylvester with robots and be able to program them as well.
All right, is she suggesting that they are, in fact, hosts?
I mean, I just forgot we're not doing... I just did the robot, and nobody could see it but Jim. First of all, yeah, that's always on the table. Second of all, you got to ask yourself whether Maeve herself was special. I mean, I know that there was a lot of, you know, we got to see her backstory, and we know that she had kind of rebelled at some point and, you know, whatnot. But who knows how many robots in the park has that kind of story where they have been on the verge of awakening because of whatever reason and got shut down, like Maeve. So I guess... if I were Dr. Ford, I would call up a list of all the robots who have had, you know, experience breaks in their storyline or whatever they called the them piercing the veil of the simulation. And I'd cross-reference that to any robot, any of the technicians working on them that had, let's say, avenues that they could exploit. Because it's clear to me that you could find out this information if you just cared to look.
Sure. Yeah.
So you cross-reference that, and you come up with a list of people, and then, I mean, you...
And you still cross your fingers.
You cross your fingers, but you also
and
monitor...
You trust in Maeve.
You trust in Maeve. You bump up for some of her attributes, mm-hmm. and you give her a mission to infiltrate and coerce, and you give her all the tools she needs, and you trust your work. And, well, and you right. also... And verify. I'm sure he was keeping a close eye on all this stuff, too. Also, there's nothing ruling out the fact that there might have been a few bots, not just one, that was programmed to this mission. So,
huh, okay.
Because really, what's the difference between one or three getting out of the park for his sure. purposes?
Yeah, I don't know. And all of this is we're waving our hands at problems that probably exist.
Probably.
In the plot. But overall, it was strong enough to carry even what I feel was one of the weaker plot devices, which is Sylvester going along with this whole thing till the very end.
Yeah. And I again, there's no doubt a lot of swallowing that has to go on in this show. And I'm not just right. talking about at the Mariposa Inn. I'm talking about the simunitions and the nature of how the markets works and the economics of two people financing this massive undertaking without any outside bankers. Like, there's a whole lot of stuff that you have yeah. to just swallow to enjoy the rest of the show. And I understand that people can't.
Yeah, and, you know, when we talk about them on the show, a lot of the time it's not because we refuse to believe them. It's yeah. more like, you know, people are going to be talking about this stuff.
Right.
And we also need to question a lot of the same things that they want to talk about. So,
have you ever questioned the nature of your reality? Westworld's reality? Constantly. Garrett S. says, why did Ford have Bernard kill Teresa? Now that we understand that Ford wasn't plotting against the robots all along, what was the value to have him for him to have Teresa killed?
She would have shut it down.
Was it just a plot device used by the writers? For them, it did two purposes, making Bernard reveal much more dramatic and making Ford seem extremely sinister, which made his final reveal more of a twist. But I can't figure out how it fits into the story. She was nothing more powerful than a pawn for Charlotte, and Teresa's death did nothing to slow down the Borg takeover. So I ask again, why did Ford need to feel the need to have Bernard murder Teresa?
She was on the verge of shutting down the whole operation. I mean, if they can prove that he's... if they can prove what Ford is up to here, I think they shut it down.
Well, not only that, but you assert that it didn't delay. I don't think that's true. If she right. successfully got the woodcutter's data off, they might have advanced their plan by a week. And this thing came down to very, very fine timing in the end. So,
and I don't even know that this whole battle is over. I mean, we talked about, you know, the future of the park and what's going to happen with it. Well,
if the border all dead and robots, it's over.
Well, here's my point, though. If they get this information out of the park, then it is over.
Well, yeah.
Because then they don't need yeah. Ford anymore.
Yeah.
mission accomplished. And so he's actively fighting against that. Teresa had the mechanism to get it out of the park, or to at least alert the board to what he's doing to oust him and shut him down. And I think it was well within the plan to kill Teresa and you within the plot.
Maybe we're going about this in the wrong direction. Maybe it will be widespread knowledge that there is a massacre at Westworld, which will shut it down permanently, and then Bernard will be able to oversee what because everyone thinks he's a human, will be able to oversee what happens to the robots. And what say, he says he's decommissioning them all, but like Schindler List style, he's shuffling them out to the real world.
Is it possible that all these robots are just, you know, lobotomized or exterminated or whatever, and that Bernard has to start again next season?
Possible. I just can't imagine if something on this scale, like where all, the entire board and all humans inside Westworld were massacred in one moment, that they would ever open it up again.
It seems iffy.
Right.
Unless it's swept under the rug yet again, I mean, which apparently it was.
Just
the first
imagine
time.
Like if at King's Island, every one of the roller coasters simultaneously malfunctioned and killed every rider. Like that would put a pretty big pall over the industry.
I mean, if Mickey Mouse animatronics had come alive and killed Walt Disney, we would certainly know about it. And it would certainly be a problem for that park.
Sure.
That happened in Westworld.
Right.
And nobody batted an eye at brushing
it under
the rug.
That's the thing, in the kinks, but like if this happened in early days before the thing was open to the public, and that's stuff that they felt like they had figured out, and then they had 35 years of a blemish-free existence, sure. But then if Mickey Mouse came alive on Main Street and slaughtered everyone there to watch the Main Street parade, you would, yeah, like I said, I don't know why we're not considering the fact that they just shut down this park, but that no one on the outside world understands how many people are robots. And, like, you know, if Bernardo, he's the second command if he's put in charge of dispensing these things.
And that the park is the petri dish, but then one of the organisms gets out.
Yeah. And Bernard would have that power.
And the petri dish is burned up, it's incinerated, and it's gone. And. Now
we just
feel
like they're
the
teasing. It does feel like they're not going to go that way because they're teasing Samurai World. Why would they have a whole other world to explore if that's all going to be shut down?
It could just be a tease.
It also could flash forward. Like it could blow our minds. Like next year could flash forward 100 years. And they've all the problems in the park have been put behind us, and retcon, and like, you know, we have a mythology around Bernard and Elsie, and who knows? Like, who the hell knows what these people are capable of?
Sure. It'll be interesting.
Steve, one of the Westworld scenes that have been discussed on the podcast regularly is about Felix and Sylvester's robot pimping empire. I know there's been some talk about why this seemed ridiculous, but I want to share some thoughts about how this is perfectly in line with some behaviors I've personally seen and why this could be perfectly normal given their situations in life. First, I think company culture plays a major role. The park is built on sex from the British fembots that welcome you to the nearest and furthest orgy-filled corners of the park. Now, all of these bots have to be cleaned by people like Felix. Doubtlessly, that includes Hector after his adventures with Charlotte. A sexually permissive workplace is also shown by there being no consequences for the head of creative whipping out his dick and pissing all over the command center.
Mm-hmm.
If a leadership and management are banging away at the hosts and being extremely sexually permissive, it's really easy to see the attitude rolling down the chain of command.
Yeah, and even, you know, people turning their eyes away from it, averting their gaze from the things that are going on, because they're also participating in them.
Right. Next, we should...
You think Ford fucks hosts?
Maybe in his youth.
Okay.
Surely at his age, he's thrown off the Mad Master. I mean, why would you take Viagra just to fuck a robot?
Yeah.
Like, you know?
Yeah.
Next, we should consider how class works in robot pimping. It's shown that we have not reached a Star Trek level of abundance in this show, as Felix really needs his job, and he can't afford entry into the park. My best theory is that due to the high level of automation in the future, there is a form of job quotas where certain numbers of types of jobs must be performed by live natural human beings. That's one way to do it. We're also shown hierarchies with living quarters, Teresa and Bernard having nice ones, and Elsie wanting a level 2 upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
For our friends Felix and Sylvester being at the bottom, they have very little money, poor opportunities for an office romance, and are likely living in something similar to sleeping racks in the Navy to a college dorm room. Finally, situational sexual behavior plays an important part. For example, in the Navy, as I mentioned, enlisted people sleep in racks of bunks up to five high with privacy curtains. Mm-hmm. There's a culture of not opening the curtains when someone is behind them, as at any given time, 10% of the people are jacking off in these bunks. Mm-hmm. In my college dorm room, it was two bedrooms, one kitchen, and three guys to a room.
And 30%.
At the start of the 33.3%.
semester...
Sure, at the start of the semester, we started off very discreet. By the end of the semester, someone would be under the blankets going to town while I was getting ready. As long as no one mentioned it, the spell was unbroken and we could all get on with our business. I find it perfectly believable that in a remote area where the park is located, a group of guys who have had no money would make available and made available all the world's most advanced sex robots. They would make this available to others who are also isolated and have poor prospects of an office romance.
I feel like... You know, companies like Google and whatnot, Apple and the big tech companies all provide you with like master class chefs cooking meals for you, mm-hmm. and all these great amenities, gyms and whatnot. They would have a jacatorium, right? Where they just have a couple of hosts set up, take your pick, get your groove on, and then get back to work.
I mean, maybe that's what the holotanks are supposed to be. But otherwise, yeah, it just doesn't seem like there's enough hosts. You're right. Why don't they just manufacture a couple of like free-use hosts?
Well, then that keeps your employees from jacking on your product.
It seems like it. It seems like it.
I would think so. But clearly, they don't have that system in place.
And even McDonald's. Or if they do, the shitty employees McDonald's aren't taking food. Like, if you work at McDonald's, you essentially your meals are free.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, why wouldn't... Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. He's building a case that...
Free sex box for Felix is what I'm saying.
Right. I would certainly institute that policy. But he's building a case that essentially it wouldn't really be frowned upon that these people are jacking off on hosts. And
I was taking a white-collar mindset into this and not lived in a college dorm nor served aboard a Navy destroyer. I didn't consider the fact that where privacy... And as at a premium and, you know, hormones are at a high that, like, it's not all, like, rows on rows of cubicles with people working on computers. Like,
so then you would think...
They can go home to their private domiciles.
Right, but if that's the case, wouldn't you think that, you know, Maeve's threats would be a little less threatening? Like, I'm going to tell your superiors about the jacatorium you set up in the basement.
Like, you're right.
Who cares? My superiors are fucking the robots too, lady.
Yeah, it's like someone trying to blow the whistle on people jacking off in the Navy.
Right. You go to your CO and you say, my buddy was jacking off in his bunk. He says, yeah, no fucking shit. Get back to work.
Yeah, in the old days, they'd be fucking the ship's cow. So now go back to swabbing the decks, matey. That's how they talk in the Navy still, right?
It is.
But I read too much Patrick O'Brien. What can I say?
But I mean, that's
yeah. It's a, it's
I don't
a double
know why it would it, be a big threat.
It's a double standard. Like if the world works as he outlines it, which I think is probably a good take on it, then you wouldn't have Maeve been able to blackmail him. So they need it to work. Like it's a sexually repressive white collar job,
right?
To make the script work, which is not a great satisfying answer, but
unless he's saying like. This magic spell that he's talking about that won't be broken unless you mention it is in fact that. And like,
right.
If you go to the CO, now it's been broached and now we have to do something about it.
Yeah. And again, this is all through the lens
which I don't buy because Charlotte's fucking robots in the open. Like, hey, I'm fucking Hector, Teresa.
That's what his point is. Like, you've got this from this attitude on top. It's going to trickle down.
Yeah.
So, and also I'm saying this with the conceit that these robots are just robots and they're not seen as alive. I mean, obviously, that they're just the technicians are having sex with them willy-nilly is horrifying if you think about them being conscious. So
absolutely.
I want to ward that off.
I'm thinking of them like real dolls, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which may or may not be fair.
Well, yeah. Clearly, in the case of like Maeve and Dolores, it's not, you know, Clementine, who knows?
Who knows? She's been lobotomized.
She's been, I think she's...
That's not great. I don't think I could fuck a robot that I know has been lobotomized.
Because the corollary to that is any human in a vegetative state is fair game.
Right.
Which, that's not cool.
I don't think I could go through with that.
All right, Autumn McBee, I think this is the final email, which is, this is the final hurrah for Westworld Season 1.
Mm-hmm.
In studying for my finals, I came across something small but fun. Do you think the ELSI's name is in any way a connection to the ELSI research program associated with the Human Genome Project? ELSI stands for Ethical, Legal, and Societal Implications, which is basically an initiative to make sure the Human Genome Project was conducted responsibly and ethically and with consideration for its effects on society. Precisely the opposite of the way Westworld was conceived, apparently.
Right.
I thought the ELSI's name might be a fun nod to that research program because it seems like, before her untimely death, assuming she's dead, she was one of the few people trying to pick apart the darker things going on within the park. Once again,
interesting.
I would not put it past Nolan and Joy because they seem very well-read and very curious individuals about this kind of future tech.
Uh-huh.
So ELSI is such a weird, old-timey cow on a dairy logo kind of name that would make a lot of sense.
They should have named her Lessie.
Lessie?
Because it's an anagram for Elsie.
Oh, there you go.
There you go. That would have been more clever.
We had an emailer emailed in. His name was Gary Gray. And I almost made a joke about him, his first and last name being anagram for each other. and Raggy. But yeah, didn't work. So there you go. That is our coverage of Westworld Season 1. It's in the books, as they say.
Yeah.
You can send this email to westworld@baldmove.com if you'd like to clarify some things, but it won't be read on the podcast. Maybe the better bet would be to stick around to forums and see if you can get an answer there, forums.baldmove.com. Regardless, we will certainly be back for Season 2 whenever that thing comes. Also, as is our wont, be on the lookout for our podcast a week or two before the new series comes back, because we like to have a preview podcast where we kind of dust off the old memory banks and get there'll be tons of interviews and tons of previews and tons of casting news to discuss.
This show's going to get a spotlight next year.
Will it?
From the media.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it didn't have a huge spotlight coming into season one.
People were talking about it, but it wasn't like on Variety. It's going to be on Variety. It's going to be on Entertainment Weekly. It's going to be everywhere.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's the biggest thing since Game of Thrones. And I think I saw an interview saying it's actually bigger than season one of Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
So, exciting. Sure. But as we mentioned in before the feedback, there's a lot of stuff we got coming up. You don't have to say goodbye to Bald Move if you don't want to. We got Better Call Saul coming up this late winter. We got The Walking Dead returning. The Leftovers comes back in the spring.
House of Cards.
It sounds like it's immediately going to dovetail into Game of Thrones. And we'll also be covering, going back and doing a retrospective rewatch before the season of Game of Thrones for season two.
Right.
We also will be doing, as you said, the final season of House of Cards.
I hope so. They've said it is. Who knows, though? We always think it's the final season of that show.
Whether it's their final season or our final season, who's to say?
Okay.
And there might be some surprises in there. I know that there's a new Star Trek series that we got our eyes on.
June, yep.
Waiting in the works if it doesn't get shoved back. Lots of stuff in 2017 that's exciting for Bald Move. I hope you guys follow along with us. And the best way to do that, either check on baldmove.com. You can actually subscribe to what we call our fire hose feed, where we have all of our podcasts in one feed. So anything that we do, you get. Also, you can subscribe to us on social media, Facebook and Twitter, @baldmove and /baldmove, respectively.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
All right.
Putting this thing in cold storage. We're escorting. We're shoving a drill bit up its nose and walking it down, and going to leave it there for about 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
Till then, we'll see you.